Hey guys, welcome to another episode of Right Out of Politics. Happy Friday. My name is Ariana Mendez, your host, coming to you from Miami, Florida. So women, the suburban women vote especially, is going to be extremely important this election. In states like Florida, Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Wisconsin, these votes will be critical and will probably decide who will be the next president of the United States. So currently polls are showing that President Trump is underperforming in this particular voting block. Is this true? Are the polls really showing what's really going out there? So today on the show, we have Lauren Feely. She is a mom of three, lives in Miami, Florida, and she feels like she really doesn't fit in any of the political parties right now. She doesn't know if she's a Republican, she's a Democrat. She definitely has her views. She understands her positions. She's proud of those positions, but doesn't feel she fits into any of those buckets. Yet she's voting a particular way this November. So we're going to talk to her, see why she's voting that way, and kind of analyze what that means for the country. And are there more people like her? Are there a lot more that we are not understanding? And is the media ignoring a movement out there? All right, without further ado, let's jump right in. Hey, Lauren, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Are you excited?
Kind of, and I'm a little nervous.
No nerves here.
All righty. So, why am I not confident?
You'll be fine. I won't be too hard on you, I promise.
All righty.
So you're a mom of three.
Three boys.
Oh, wow. What ages?
9, 6, and almost 2.
So do you even have a life?
I did. Before COVID.
How was that with three kids? How did that go?
It was hard. I mean, the first couple weeks were fun. I think everybody wanted a break from everything that they were doing. The kids were over school. We gladly welcomed a break from work. But then after we cooked every single day, three meals a day, and it lost its allure.
You ran out of recipes. We wanted to go
back to normal. Yes. We wanted to go back to normal.
Are the kids back in school?
They are back in school. The older two go to public school. So they just recently started a few weeks ago. The baby has been back since June 1st. However, he came in contact with a positive case on Wednesday in his class. We don't know who because they won't say. And he's now quarantining for 2 weeks. So he gets to go back on November 3rd.
Oh, wow. Any symptoms?
No symptoms. We've tested negative, but of course that can change over the course of 2 weeks. So we're just kind of periodically going to get tested. And trying to keep it together. He's kind of our patient zero, so we're testing him the most.
Got it. Well, he's too cute to be sick, so positive vibes.
Yeah, I'm hoping. We did have a cold a few weeks ago that we were all convinced was corona because it lingered for so long, but we were always negative. So there are still other bugs out there besides corona.
Yeah, I was about to say, you can't even get a common cold anymore. Everybody is jumping. Oh, it's corona. It's like, you are allowed to get a cold every once in a while. It's not
exactly
COVID-19.
And we were locked up for so long that that cold lingered for like 2 weeks.
Oh, wow. Okay. But everybody is in good spirits.
Yep. Everybody's excited for Halloween.
Oh, yes. What are you doing for Halloween? How's that this year?
I'm not sure. I think we're going to, we're definitely doing a golf cart parade on the Friday before, which is this Friday now. And then Saturday, we're kind of just going to get on the golf cart too and go around to houses, obviously pending our subsequent negative test. And well, we're leaving the baby at home. My grandmother's here, but we're going to take the older ones and we're going to go to any house that has decorations.
Okay, so that's kind of the sign. Hey, decorations, come get candy. We're open for business.
Exactly.
Got it. Got it. So have you voted yet?
Yes, I did.
So before we talk about your choice, let's talk a little bit about, like political scientists like to call your political identity. So before you were a mom, you studied political science, right?
Yes.
All right. So some of this stuff is not going to be new to you. It's concepts you studied and remember well. So you're a millennial. So how would you identify your political upbringing?
My upbringing, I think, is different than where, it's very different from where I stand now.
Okay.
In certain aspects. My parents were obviously very staunch Republicans.
Okay.
You know, coming from Cuba, I think that's what they all were Republicans. And right around the time that I was able to vote, they swang from one side all the way to the other.
Like overnight, or was it a gradual progression?
It was kind of overnight. My younger sister was diagnosed with autism, and my parents just realized that they weren't getting help or treatment from her that they could get if they had more money, and that there were a lot of resources that just weren't available to them because they weren't in the group that got things for free, and they weren't in the groups where these extra therapies and these extra visits and these specialists were really being covered adequately.
Okay.
So I think that, I know that was the major force that changed their minds politically and made them do the 180.
Gotcha. So personal reasons.
It was very personal. And it's like, I feel like you'll find a lot of people who are one topic voters, one issue voters. And for them, that was what started it. And then, now, for a little while, my dad had a Twitter and my grandmother was actually the one who showed it to me. And it was just, a completely different view of what I like compared to what I grew up with. Just every topic they had now like flipped on. So, for me, I think, I never went in any extreme.
Okay.
And I kind of like stayed in the middle, which is what I was discussing with you, prior to this, is that I don't really know where I fit in right now, what my political views, I know what my political opinions are, but I don't know where they align.
So let's go back to your first election. Who did you vote for?
I voted for Obama, but I was not an educated voter. I was in my freshman year of college at the time, and I liked the things he said. I had no idea what I was talking about. I had no idea what he was talking about. I had no idea of the ramifications of what he was proposing, but it all sounded nice, and I voted for Obama.
Did motherhood change your political identity at all?
I don't think so. I think that just maturity changed my political views. I don't think it changed it. I think it gave me a better grounding to actually have opinions, whether I'm parroting somebody else's or being swayed by, nice things that somebody said. Like, I actually found substance in what people were saying and what I believe in and what I want and what I think is fair.
Would it be fair to say that you became more critical of political opinions in the sense that you wanted to know the why, the more in-depth substantive issues?
Yes. And I actually, one of my biggest issues is that I feel like people have such strong opinions about politics. And I feel like the majority of people don't understand why. They don't understand what they're passionate about. They'll just, because they align themselves in one way or another, they're so gung-ho about it. And they don't really see, I guess, like the forest for the trees.
And maybe you can connect to this. Sometimes I feel like talking about politics nowadays is like a toxic issue. And historically, it's always been divisive. But nowadays, just because of the state of the country, it's like, ah, do I even want to even mention any the names of certain politicians or just even talk about the economy? Because people just are triggered by that. What's your experience with that?
I mean, I've, for the most part, I think the majority of this election, and even the last one, I kept my mouth shut. I mean, I haven't been very vocal. I have my opinions. I talk to them, you know, about them with close friends and my husband and family members. But I mean, definitely not somebody to post my opinions on Facebook. I mean, even like a funny meme, whether it's Democratic or Republican, I can find it funny and I won't even repost because I'm like, that's going to start something.
What about family interactions? Do you feel that sometimes that can also be uncomfortable?
No, I feel like the family members that I talked about it with kind of already know where I stand, and you know, they are obviously, well, I can't, this is not a blanket statement. The majority of them mm-hmm. are, you know, pretty chill about it. They can, they, you know, they're of the mindset where they're respectful of other people's opinions. I think as you go up the chain and you get to the older ones, you know, there's no conversation to be had there. It's kind of just like them telling you what they think is fact, and there's no conversation. So I don't really go there, but they know where I stand and they know my opinions. It's just not something that we talk about very often.
Interesting. So it's not a dinner table topic.
No. I mean, like, you know, my husband and I will discuss, and, you know, with my in-laws, we'll discuss certain things that are happening, you know, in the political environment right now. And, you know, we might have different opinions here or there, but we're pretty much on the same page.
What issues are, what do you say, do or die issues for you? Those are the issues that you're willing to, you know, put your sword down for.
Well, when I was younger, I used to call myself fiscally Republican and otherwise libertarian, mm-hmm. which, I mean, is a very kid thing to say, I think. But I do still, like, my views still line up that way, I think. I think personal liberties are big for me. I'm by no means, you know, an extremely vocal advocate for any which group. But I do, you know, I do believe in same-sex marriage. I believe that women have the right to have an abortion. I like all those hot topic issues that have to deal with singular people and not, you know, groups. I don't think it's mm-hmm. anybody's, you know, doesn't impact anybody else. I say, like, let them do them. But I think the issue that I vote on is more monetary policy than anything
else. So your wallet. So you vote with your wallet, like the old saying goes.
Yeah.
Okay. So I don't know if you heard, but Amy Coney Barrett just became justice.
Yes, I saw.
Amy Coney Barrett. Yeah, she just confirmed to the U.S. Supreme Court, replacing the late Justice Ginsburg. How do you feel about that? As a woman, what's your take on that?
I don't really have any strong feelings towards her in any direction. You know, I tried during her nomination to really block out what people wanted her to say and what they wanted her to commit to and accidentally say.
Mm-hmm.
I know that there was like a lot of, you know, prying questions and,
you know, trying to get her to slip up. I know she's a conservative, but I think for the most part, from what she showed us, that she was very fair in her responses and that she wasn't going to let her personal opinion impact her judgments.
So some on the left like to say that because she's a conservative woman, she's the mother of five biological children, she's adopted too, she may pose a threat to reproductive rights. Do you think that's a fair concern?
I don't think so. I think it would be very obvious. I think people would be very upset. I just don't see that being something that you could put onto other people and you can read, you know, for her to be a Supreme Court justice, she has to have proven herself to be fair. This would have been an issue for years.
Yeah, long before.
And all the other things that she's done in her life, people would have known that she just wasn't upholding the Constitution. And for it to become an issue now, it seems like an agenda.
What was your reaction when you heard that the Republican-controlled Senate was going to push through a confirmation of a Trump's nominee to the Supreme Court before the election?
I was annoyed.
Okay.
Because to me, because I do believe in fairness, the Republican Party held off on nominating a Supreme Court justice when Obama was leaving office. And they held, and they didn't do it from February to when Trump was elected and sworn in.
You're talking about Judge Garland.
Yeah. And that's a lot longer than we had right now before the election. So to me, that's very hypocritical. And I mean, I could even go farther back because I believe it was Biden himself in the 90s who said that if there was already an election underway, that we shouldn't vote in a new Supreme Court justice and that we should let the new president decide.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think is fair. But then the Democrats didn't want to do that when Obama was in office. They wanted to nominate. And then the Republicans stopped them. So they were hypocritical then. But then now that we waited last time, now the Republicans wanted to get it done real fast.
So the Republican argument to that would be it's a little bit different because there was recently an election where the Senate was given, or I should say Republicans maintained majorities in the Senate. So in a way, the people have spoken by through the last election where Republicans maintained their control of the Senate.
But you don't think that precedent has any bearing on the situation? And you think it's just the division, whatever the percentages are in the Senate?
Well, I think there is an argument to be made if you look at the Senate as part of government, as just a representative of the party that controls it, there is an argument to be made that as an institution, the Senate gets to be reelected every so often. The people speak by maintaining majorities or overturning majorities in the Senate. And the Senate is there to advise and consent what the executive branch does. So there is intellectually an argument that is not completely dishonest that if you had a recent election and a certain party maintained majorities in that branch, in that chamber, then hey, the people have already spoken. So if the Senate is in Republican majority hands, the people want it that way, and their role is to advise and consent. That would be the Republican argument to that.
That's an argument.
All right. And did you watch the debates?
I watched the first one as much as I possibly could.
Okay, explain.
To me, it was painful.
It was upsetting to watch. I think that was the first time that I actually posted on my Facebook about anything political, because I was embarrassed that these were the two people that we had representing us on either side. And
okay. Did you watch the VP debate?
Yes, I did. That one was okay, easier to watch. But I thought that it was a very impactful. Like, I don't think that it didn't really educate me anymore on, I mean, I obviously had already made up my mind, but it didn't make me want to vote for anybody any more or any less. Okay. I felt like it was pretty benign.
Well, some would say it was as entertaining as watching Ice Cream.
Yeah, there wasn't any substance there. I didn't, you know, obviously I watched it so I could, you know, at the water cooler the next day have, you know, could talk about it. But no, I also probably would have turned that off. But the presidential debate, I actually turned off because it was painful. And I posted that I really, like, I want to see somebody. And I mean, I'll give it away now. I want to see somebody on the Republican Party, in the Republican Party, that has the fire and, like, the youth, I think, that Obama brought to the Democratic Party. I think that, I mean, you know, I voted for Obama the first time. And I mean, because what do I have in common with, I don't even know how old he was at that time, with McCain.
Mm-hmm.
The second time I voted for Romney. And then I did vote for Trump this last election. But that's a different story.
So,
because of Hillary.
Gotcha. Oh, Hillary.
Nobody likes Hillary.
No, not even Bill.
Yeah. But that was, you know, and that was also, a pretty tough election. You know, I had a lot of friends who were like, how could you do this to us? How could you vote for somebody who, you know, doesn't support us or whatever? And, you know, I don't feel like Trump has taken anybody's rights away. I don't think that anybody's been negatively impacted. I mean, I feel like we all have been negatively impacted, I think, by the division of what's going on right now. I think it's extremely taxing on everybody. And a lot of it has to do, I'm kind of going on a tangent here, but
no.
I think a lot of it has to do, like, this political climate has to do with the media, and not in the media the way that, you know, Trump says it's the media, you know, the way they picture him or whatever. I think it's the access to the media. I think it's the fact that it's at our fingertips, and it has been in the last 10 years, probably more so than in any other election. I would narrow it down to just 10 years, because we've all, you know, we've had internet now for a while, but having it on our phones, I think this last decade is when everybody got an iPhone or an Android. Like, there's no more Blackberries. There's no more Razors. There's no Jewels. Everybody is on a smartphone, and everybody can have Facebook at their fingertips, where you're constantly just reading headlines, and you may not even be reading the entire article. And people are so misinformed. And not only are they misinformed, but they have so much access to each other. And those political discussions that you were told not to have with certain people, people are having on the internet with complete strangers. And the environment is just so toxic. Where, you know, I was actually having this discussion with my grandmother today, because I'm like, you are too much. I'm like, have you ever been to a rally, like, for any other president ever? Have you ever been, like, have you ever done something to support them? Have you ever gone to the polls? Have you, like, what have you done? And she's like, nothing. I'm like, so you're just an internet warrior? Like, I don't understand what the point of that is.
I think it's the marketplace of ideas, but unfortunately that also brings out the the dark side of people's personalities, and most people don't like when others disagree with them. And the internet kind of opens the door to do that in a safe way, because you're not staring at that person who you're disagreeing with straight in the eye. So there's something that emboldens people about that anonymous status, if you will.
No, for sure. And I think it breeds negativity. I'm with Meghan Markle on this one. Like, I think the internet is such a, it can be such a bad place. And especially when you bring up topics like this, the division, I think, seems worse when you're reading it, when you're scrolling through, than what it really is on the street.
Yeah, well, you know, also online, I think people, because they're behind that phone screen or that laptop screen, people also allow maybe their true colors to shine a little bit through. And when you're in civil society, you don't want to come across as radical one way or another, right? So maybe those views exist and people are just afraid to say it to other people's faces. But through a computer, you'll say anything. And that's the unfortunate reality of nowadays. And I think that makes this whole political discussion more toxic, because people just don't care about being decent to each other anymore.
Yeah, the anonymity is dangerous. I just think it's so unfortunate. And, you know, it's hard now that we are so, not only are we like divisive amongst ourselves, but that you have to be on board with somebody like 100%. And this goes both ways. You know, people will, you'll form your opinion. Like I said before, I vote with my wallet. So I will have made my decision, mm-hmm. and then somebody will bring up a non sequitur and say, well, that now means, and extrapolate something and form that as my belief. Well, that's not my belief, but that's not what I'm voting for. That's not what I'm voting on. And then they come with their moral high horse and, well, why aren't you voting for that? Why is your wallet more important than this? And I think that's the most dangerous thing that we have going on right now, is that guilt and that shame. And, you know, this whole cancel culture that we have, that can happen in for a wide variety of instances. You know, people don't even want to put up political signs in front of their businesses because they don't want to be associated with one or the other. Where...
Yeah, political parties have become very tribal.
Exactly. And I feel like before, people voted on topics. And you could have a Democratic nominee or Republican nominee that, you know, may have had different views. And, you know, during the nomination process, you decide which one you want. And they're all different. And I feel like everything's very homogenized right now on either side.
I agree. I also think, though, that for people on the extremes of both sides, there's fundamental differences, and that's why it becomes emotional for a lot of these people. It's not just a policy issue. It's about, these people identify so strongly with these political beliefs, it's become almost part of their identity. So them coming across another person that has a completely different point of view, or maybe a 80% same point of view with a 20% discrepancy, that's an affront to them, because it's an existential question at that point. So that's the danger of this culture we're living in now. It's all or nothing. And we should be able to have discussions with each other and be able to say, hey, I agree with that, but maybe not so much. Let me explain why. And still be able to sit down with somebody and, you know, drink a beer, and it's okay. It's not the end of a friendship. It's not the end of a relationship.
Yeah, it's hard. And I feel like right now, I mean, I feel like, and you know, this goes back to what I was originally saying, where I don't feel like I fall into any political party per se. You know, I've had, you know, discussions with Democrats as to why I'm voting the way I'm voting. And then I've had discussions with Republicans that, well, why do you believe that? Like, you can't sit with us. You know what I mean? No, you're not completely on board.
Well, as a As a lifelong Republican, I'm a big believer of big tent parties. If you're going to have a litmus test for everybody that may like a platform view that your party has, you're going to alienate a lot of people. Understanding that people are, you know, complex and have diverse opinions, you push for the things that you do agree with, and hopefully you can get them to vote for you in whatever cycle you're running. But I think it's a mistake to think, oh, it just has to be a pure Republican Party or a pure Democratic Party. Big tent parties are more attractive. They attract more people. So we'll see. We'll see what happens after this election. Maybe we'll go back to a more, you know, more even-handed approach, or the parties may continue as is because they're rewarded for being this polarized by their base, by donors. So there's a lot of going in that direction.
No, and I've seen it in the few, you know, 10 years that I've been able to vote. 12 years. How old am I? that I've been voting. You know, I've seen it. You know, there, just a mere 12 years ago, we were able to have conversations about it. And now it's not that way anymore. So for me, I don't even know if... It's hard because you want your vote to count and you want to, you know, put it somewhere where it's valuable. But then you're also perpetuating, you know, in my case, I'm perpetuating something that I may not necessarily agree with. And it
yeah, it's yeah.
So
22.
You know, I've always been torn, you know, as to where I want to be, but.
So may I ask, who are you voting for?
I voted for Trump.
Okay. Why did you vote for Trump?
I voted for Trump because of, not because of his, but because of Biden's monetary policy.
Okay. That's fair. And do you, let me ask you this, Lauren. Did you just saying that on a podcast make
yes.
you feel uncomfortable? Why do you think that?
Because
is?
I've been very private about it because I'm not necessarily proud of it. I mean, there are a lot of things,
okay.
You know, I, Trump as a person, I mean, not that anybody is perfect, especially in politics. Like, I'm a huge fan of Veep, which I know is satire, but, you know, it's founded in some truth. And, you know, I know that none of these people are half perfect even, you know, they do what they got to do. And maybe Trump is just a little more honest with what he says. But for me, he.
So Biden sucked them.
No, for me, it really was his. I mean, he seems like a nice. I used to love those memes. Remember the memes with him and Obama when they were leaving office?
Oh,
I
yeah,
used
the
to love man, those.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, my God, he's so cute. He's like a grandpa. I love Biden. And but, you know. What do we know about the vice president? Usually nothing. They don't, you know,
mm-hmm.
I'm not going to go into that, but we don't know much about them. And,
gotcha.
You know, it wasn't until probably like the last year that I was teetering there for a little while. And then, you know, when numbers came out and it felt real, I was like, there's no way I can vote for Biden. Like, I need to vote for Trump.
Would you have voted for Bernie Sanders?
I don't think so, no. No.
No, I asked. You know, there's some Bernie fans out there that are still feeling the burn. So,
no,
you know,
I wouldn't. I mean, he seems like a good guy, but he was a little too radical for me, too. And, you know, maybe I am stuck here. I mean, maybe I'm doing it to myself. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know if I'll ever fit into this two-party system.
And maybe that's okay. And maybe they'll make elections more interesting. So
you know, I really do wish,
you know, for
people
like you,
that there was a group, because I know that I'm not alone, that there are other millennials out there who, you know, are not completely, you know, we're fiscally Republican, but we're not bound by, you know, let's say the Bible here for all intents and purposes. And we're mainstream thinkers and we're with it. And we're in 2020, but we also, you know, don't want to have this huge government that, you know, takes all our money.
Yeah. So we'll see. I'm hopeful that once the millennials get into power and start running a few things, we'll get a new
breed of politicians. And that's my biggest hope. And that's what I, after I watched, when I was so upset about the first presidential debate, when it was over, I was like, we just need younger blood. Like, there wouldn't be this animosity I feel and this helplessness that I know some people feel in this political climate if there were people that more accurately represented us. And that,
you know, I'll disagree with you on that, because millennials can be as catty as
no, we can definitely be as catty, but I just feel like, you know, having to put our government into the hands of people who are nearly 80, I mean, think of it in our own households. You know, when people turn 80, are we now bringing them in to live with us? You know, as, you know, are your grandparents go to live with your parents and then your parents come to live with you? Like, we're not putting them in the White House. And right. To me, that's something that is a little out of touch. You know, the people who are working, the people who are having families, the people who are moving this economy are people who are younger.
Right. But I think also running for public office takes a certain type of financial status and a certain place in your life that older people have, and people our age are still trying to figure that stuff out. So I think that's why we have the results that we have as far as
it is difficult, you know, and you obviously have to have a certain amount of years under your belt and experience and, you know, be wiser, but there has to be some kind of happy medium between, you know, people who would be considered elderly and, you know, people who are in their 50s who have successful businesses, right, and, well, you know, have proven themselves, but still have, you know, kids that keep them in touch and, you know, are more representative of the workforce in America.
I agree, and I'm hopeful. I think you're seeing here in 2020 the last of that generation as far as candidates go. So there will be a natural progression into Generation X, and obviously millennials will come after that. So it's just a waiting game.
Yeah, but I also don't want the millennials to come when I'm also old. Exactly.
When we're that both old. When we're Nancy Pelosi's age.
Which maybe, you know what? Maybe this is just life cycle, another part of the political journey that we learn that, you know, when you are in your 30s, like I am now, you want to be represented and you want to be represented and eventually you are. And that's your part.
But hey, get involved. Start at a local level. And maybe you can be the first one to raise your hand and be that millennial away.
Oh my goodness. Well, can we get out of COVID so my kids can get out of the house? I need more time.
Fair enough. Well, Lauren, thank you so much for coming on the show. It's been a pleasure. All right.
I
hope to have you back. Again, I want to thank Lauren for being on the show. It was great to have you on, a great conversation, and it was really interesting to get some insight into a mom, a proud American who really doesn't feel like she fits into any of the political parties yet is voting Trump this November. So that was a very interesting conversation, and we appreciate your time, Lauren, and thanks for coming on, and I know it was your first time on a podcast, and you did great, so thank you. Guys, remember, if you haven't voted yet and you're eligible to vote, please go out and vote on Election Day. Time is running out. I already voted. My vote was for Donald J. Trump, and I'm very proud of that. And between Biden and Trump, the choice cannot be clearer. Why did I vote for Trump? I voted for Trump because I believe in lower taxes, smaller government, big daddy state is not my thing. I want somebody who stands up for American values, somebody who stands up for American interests first. And if that means that you need to say things and do things that don't make the international community happy, that's okay, because American interests should be put first. That's how it should be. Every country should be motivated by their own self-interest, because that will only increase the prosperity of their country and ultimately their people. So that is why I'm voting for Donald J. Trump this November. And honestly, if you look at Biden, there is no policy platform, there is no position that he holds that I could support. His plan on climate change is one of the most radical, and is in the same vein as the extremely radical plan pushed by Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and her cohorts. I can't support that plan. I can't support anybody who even has a similar plan, because that will destroy not only the American economy, but the world economy at the end of the day. I'm not into that. So I voted for Trump 2020. I'm proud to have voted for Trump 2020. I encourage you to vote for Trump 2020. But even if you're not voting for Trump, I encourage you to vote. It is your constitutional right. So get out there, vote for your local and state elections, vote for your congressmen, senators, and vote for president. This is what it's all about. You can make a difference today. So thank you so much for tuning in. I just want to let you guys know I'm going to be on the Mike Essence Show next Monday at 4 p.m. So I'm really excited about that. So check him out. He's a great friend of the show. He has his own talk show, and it's really great stuff. He has really great material. A lot of important people have been on the show, like Marco Rubio and others. So I'm really excited to have him ask me questions and ask me about my predictions this upcoming Tuesday. So get ready for that on Monday. And we may have a bonus episode about what happened on Tuesday, just for giggles, just FYI. But thank you so much, guys, again, for tuning in. Remember, we're on Instagram, Facebook, wherever you get your social media, we're there. And we're also on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify, so you can get the latest episode streamed to your phone or other listening device. Guys, thank you so much for making the show a success. Get out there, vote, do your homework, and catch up on old Right Owl Politics episodes. Good stuff. Thanks, guys. Talk to you soon.